I'm Alex Fracon. You're listening to My Therapist and I, a podcast that isn't just about therapy, it is therapy. More specifically, my therapy. It was my birthday earlier this week, and how did I celebrate? Well, some therapy with Dr. Steve. We talk about my EMDR session some more. We talk about home buying. There's a lot on my mind, and Dr. Steve thinks I might be doing a little too much mastery. So we discuss that. Hope you enjoy.
Dr. Steve, I'm a work in progress, okay? And I'm recording.
Clearly you haven't mastered that yet.
Yep. Quick. Well, no need to follow up on the last episode.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Hey, thank you. Yep. It is, this is birthday episode. How old do you think I am, Dr. Steve?
It's somewhere above 21.
Yep. Steve was like, oh, 21.
I think we did this before, 31.
Yeah. No. I literally just told you like 2 minutes ago.
No.
You don't remember?
No.
Yeah, I straight up told you I went over to turn on the AC.
What did you say?
I said 36. Oh, you don't remember that, huh?
Gosh.
Well, I don't know when like Alzheimer's onsets.
See, it's been in my family. My dad died of it.
Oh, now I feel bad.
No, it's too late.
Oh, gosh. yeah, I'm 36, which it's...
You're 10 years past Obamacare.
Yeah. You joke about that. That was the reason I stopped being a rapper. Do you know how that was? I told you this. After college, I tried to make it as like a hip-hop artist. No, I didn't tell you this?
No, you didn't. Yeah. But that's why you were so impressed with my Eminem freestyle in the last session.
That's why I shook my head. Yes, but that's why I knew what you were talking about right away, yes. I do shows, you know, all around Minneapolis and get on The Current, which is a local radio station here. And I was moderately successful in Minneapolis, but couldn't.
Really?
Yeah, I couldn't.
The atmosphere kick you out of the scene? Or Prince?
I did a very good job of, you know, part of my joie de vivre is I like to poke around with people and have fun and playfully tease. And if there's one group of people who do not like to be playfully teased, it's artists.
Rappers.
Yeah, no, just artists in general, creatives in general. Very, very, you know, they need to know they can trust you. So I would always playfully make fun of Atmosphere on Twitter. And at one point he got really mad and just like told me off. Cause I was like, I kept asking him if he was gonna, I was doing a Christmas show or show during Christmas. So I was like, hey man, are you still going to show up in your Santa Claus costume?
And I asked that was him, picking, that was that, poking fun. That was enough.
I mean, it was just a playful thing and he just got really mad. But anyway, so Atmosphere, not a big fan of mine, but First Avenue was the one venue I didn't get to play. I got to play the 7th Street Entry, which was a lot of fun. The Caboose, Fine Line.
Would you wish you'd have a star out on First Ave?
My brother joked about that. I think that would be cool, but it's not the end of the world. Anyway, the reason I got a job in advertising was because I turned 26 and I was like, I'm going to need healthcare. So I like to, I mean, Obamacare was dope in that it gave me X amount of years to pursue a dream before I had to hang them up. So, with you know.
And become an adult.
Become an adult, yeah. And like, as silly as that sounds, like I definitely am appreciative for those extra years of being able, that was what I needed to be like, okay, I can continue to pursue this. I don't have to be an adult yet, but at 36, you're...
Thanks, Obama.
Seriously. I love that dude. Great dude. I'd love to meet him. I'm so fascinated by people who have it so put together because I want to be like, what do you really think and feel? Who do you vent to? The world vents to you. Who do you get to vent to and what do you say? You know, what if he's like this really spiteful, cranky dude? Like when you get him, you know.
How much do you think you get of him? How much do you think any of us get of authentic people in public?
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. In a world that's social media driven and media driven, and
I know.
There's an editing floor with reams of celluloid,
and you say the right thing all of the time. It's like, okay,
yeah.
What are you really thinking?
Yeah.
But I'm an adult, but I don't feel like an adult. And I wonder if people look at me, I kind of hope people look at me as like age ambiguous, you know, like
non-binary.
Yeah. Like non, whatever the age equivalent young, of that. Old. Yeah. Yeah. It's just sort of, I'm ageless, but yeah. My birthday. Woo woo. I was going to ask you, oh, I know what I was going to bring up. I'm going to clear my, I hate making this noise. You know, this is the same way you call alligators. That's the noise you make.
I did not know that.
Either that or I got totally duped by a Everglade Florida man, tour guide, airboat guide.
What are the chances?
Yeah. Hey, he made the call and the alligator came up, so.
Was he also dangling any raw meat?
No, but, you know, he fed the alligator after he called it. It was during my EMDR session when I had this like kind of epiphany about therapy. I was talking about like trauma, and I think I've mentioned this on this podcast, but like a sort of way that I have evaluated therapists is like, you know, whether or not I feel like they've been through the gauntlet, seen some shit.
Yeah.
And then you made the joke about like, oh, I raised kids. I've seen some shit. Literally diapers. You made a diaper joke. I don't know if you remember that. It was good. It was a great joke. It's great.
I do remember that actually.
And for whatever reason, my mind was just, so people who aren't familiar with the EMDR process, like you get one prompt at the beginning and then you just, your brain goes, and every 45 seconds, she or he, the person checks in, hey, what are you noticing? And you tell them, they say, okay, go with that. Then your brain just kind of meanders some more. So you go all over the place. And one of the places I went, I was thinking about like my relationships with people and the role that like trauma plays. And I might be mischaracterizing this, so cut me some slack here. But in my brain, I was like, I've noticed that a lot of the really close friends I've had, I can think of, you know, three people who are like really hit it off with them. I also noticed that they're also sort of really emotionally unavailable people. Like they're really good at not being bothered by emotions. And I was thinking more about that. I was like, you know, thinking about it, a lot of those people had been through stuff, serious stuff. And they sort of coped by being like impervious to emotions or, you know, cool with the spectrum because they've experienced the highs and the lows of it. And I was like, really, I was like, wow, do I just relate with people who have experienced trauma? Like, is that a way that I, like, am
I? Are you saying that they're not swayed by emotion or they don't let emotion rule the day? Or?
Maybe they're more comfortable with intense emotions. They're not bothered. They don't shut down. It's like you can have a normal conversation. You can say something scathing. You can, you know, it's almost like they're hardened. They're callous. But when it comes to like sincerity and honesty and truth, they get a little uncomfortable. Because I have a couple of friends where it's like, we can talk about whatever and we can poke fun at each other, you know, self-deprecating humor, no issues. And I just was thinking, I don't know, I was just trying to get to the root of it. But I also have found I have friends, I'm friends with people who like, I feel like at the end of the day, if I really, really needed them, they would be like, hey, sorry, I can't. You know, we're all like out for, you know, we're all self-preserving, kind of
interested.
Yeah. Protect. And I was just thinking about that. And that led to a interesting thought I had about my therapist, George, which was like, you know, I've been seeing him for 7 years now. And I would always describe him. I was like, oh, he's an amazing therapist. Really, really enjoy my work with them. And then when I was going down this path, my EMDR, I was like, wait a minute, like, is there a world where the reason I've seen him for so long is because I feel like as though I can relate with him. And it's not necessarily what he says to me, or the work we do together, but more so I'm sitting with a person who I feel like understands what I'm feeling, has gone through what I've gone through, has experienced trauma. And I don't know how to articulate it past that point, but it was sort of interesting for me to think about. Because it's kind of like, whoa, you know, maybe I started to wonder if like my relationship, you know, with George is, it needs to change, or because he's brought that up. He's like, you know, maybe we're reaching the end of our work together. He keeps saying that. And I'm always like, no, I think there's more. But I sort of had this moment where I was like, you know, maybe I understand what he's saying. I just have a tendency to, I don't know, it's just, it's such a coincidence that like I can think of a few people who I get along with really well. And they also frustrate me sometimes because they can be so oblivious to like, somewhat like borderline sociopathic in terms of like, you know, not understanding like emotion or needing people, you know, they're so independent, like so like brutally independent. I seem to attract, I'm attracted to those kinds of people.
Mm-hmm.
Like on a personality level, sort of.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's an interesting observation. I don't know that I, like for me, I don't know that I would connect it to that they've experienced trauma, because one of the things we know about trauma is that people respond differently to it.
Mm-hmm.
So one person can be calm, cool, collected, and the other person can be freaking out on the outside, is what it looks like to the outside observer. So there may be something there. It may be, you know, you may be hitting a nail on the head, or there's people who act certain ways in response to their own traumas that you're less interested in being a part of.
I don't know why my brain went there, but it's fascinating. The process of EMDR is like reminiscent of, you're not going to be able to relate to this, but I've heard from people that when they get really high, they have epiphanies that later on they're like, oh, that didn't really make any sense. Like someone comes up with a brilliant idea when they're stoned. And then when they come, they're like, oh, no, that doesn't make sense. But like doing EMDR is the same way, in the sense of like, I feel like I have this epiphany. I'm like, oh, wow, I understand myself way better.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, I'm like, you know, I bring it up to you and you're like, well, yeah, maybe yes, maybe no. And I'm like, oh, maybe it wasn't a big epiphany. Felt like it at the time. Yeah. So that's what it's kind of forced me to start, not forced me, but it like got me thinking about what do I, you know, I've always been very specific in like what I look for in people.
Yeah.
Who I get along with, who I want to spend time with, who I want to engage with.
Yeah.
And I find myself sort of pumping the brakes on that a little bit.
Pumping the brakes on certain people, or pumping the brakes on having criteria?
Having criteria. Because there were criteria that I was like, oh, these are good. And then criteria like, oh, these are bad. And I'm starting to question both. Do I think the good are really good? You know, high achieving, independent, push themselves to the limits. Like, well, you know, are those really things to admire and aspire? And then the things I sort of looked down upon were like simple, you know, like, how would you describe it? Suburban living kind of lifestyle. Like, oh, I mow my lawn. I go for walks. Everything is, you know, pretty chill.
Yeah.
And I'm like, find myself being like, well, wait, who's to say, yeah, either is good or bad. And it was sort of trippy for me. Interesting observation, I take it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where to go with it necessarily.
Yeah. There's nowhere to really go with it. It was an interesting epiphany for me at the time. I remember experiencing, be like, oh, I should bring this up with Dr. Steve. Little did I know he wasn't going to like it.
It's not about liking. I'm curious to hear more.
I don't know if
because I don't know. I don't know how to respond right now. I don't know what kind of response you're looking for.
I found myself sort of, I'm at a point where obviously I'm in my advanced age, reevaluating a lot of my friendships,
yeah.
relationships.
Yeah.
And I find myself, I was like, oh, there were friendships I was super confident in.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, these bring me joy. Stimulating conversation.
Yeah. This person's always going to be there in my life for me.
No. Kind
of no, not.
This person is always going to be, it's almost like useful in a weird way. Like, this is a good friend to have for me. We're mute, you know, it's beneficial. Stimulating conversation.
Uh-huh.
They are interesting. But yeah, missing, lacking that sort of, oh, they're going to be there for me. They're going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm starting now to be like, maybe I should try cultivating those kinds of relationships. Mm.
Yeah.
As opposed to focusing more on like, oh, what's going to look good on paper sort of friendships.
Mm.
I used to always like rank my relationships based on how interesting and compelling I found the conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to think that's not necessarily the best indicator of a friend.
Yeah, maybe not.
Because I find the really interesting people are also like ones that are really likely to leave you hanging. And like, you know, this is just my personal experience. Like, I got a really, really interesting friend who I was really, really close with in college. He was always like the gold standard of like, we just get each other, super fascinating conversations, similar sense of humor, inseparable. I don't know if he's going to show up to my wedding. You know?
Yeah.
Like, he hasn't, my brain is trying to process that. How can both those things be true? How could he have been or be my best friend? And I don't know if he's going to show up to my wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Can't even be like, yeah, man, really excited. Got your invitation. I'll be there. I booked. I'm not going to know. I'll probably find out a week before. And I've been thinking a lot about that. And I've been like, do I have other friends like that? I do kind of have other friendships like that. Yeah. And I think that sort of all stemmed from me trying to, maybe that's a little mastery brain there. But yeah, it is, you know, I have been sort of thinking about the friendships I have in my life.
Yeah. My experience of you, Alex, is that there's no shortage of things for you to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And as you, I'm going to go back to your poster here, as you, you know, toy with mastery versus acceptance, try to figure out where does my joie de vivre come in,
mm-hmm.
you know, how does determining things are my fault and not my fault, how is that helpful to me? You know, like I just see you at a crossroads of exploration right now. Mm-hmm. And why not put friends in that as well? Like, why not, you know, critically look at and go, huh, maybe I've been thinking about friends in a way that's not so helpful. Or maybe it's not in a way that's so accurate. Or
I guess where I feel confused is like, what would be the flip side? Just to, like, what would be the acceptance? Like, oh, okay, you got some friends who maybe you can't rely on them as much as you'd like, and that's okay.
Yeah, well, I think it's okay, and then you just know, it's like buyer beware, right? Just know what you're getting with that person. So if you say, hey, I really need you to be here, or I need you to step up, or I really need your input on this thing, and if that person has got an element of flakiness to them, just know what you're getting, right?
So that's a really more succinct way of describing it. I have a lot of good friends who are also flaky.
Mm-hmm.
It's so fascinating that they're super interesting. I find them super interesting, and they also all happen to be pretty flaky.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that can't be coincidence. Yeah.
I had a friend who talked about it. He said there's two types of people in the world. Those are always dangerous dichotomies, right? And he would talk about a-holes and flakes. And a-holes were more self-interested, and flakes were just oblivious.
Mm-hmm. I don't see... Yeah. I assume their flakiness is intentional, because they're all thoughtful people. They're all very intelligent people.
That's trending toward douchebaggery, right?
I don't know what it is, and I've been so... I've spent a lot of time trying to figure it out, right? My mastery brain.
Yeah.
As opposed to just accepting, hey, that's the way they are. Buyer beware.
That's what you get with Jim. Jim's going to be that kind of guy.
Yep.
Mary's going to...
And you can't...
Matt's Mary.
You can't expect Jim to be like a Bob.
Right.
You know, you'd like for Jim to be Jim and Bob, but Jim is just Jim.
Jim Bob.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is. Like, I'd love for there to be...
But you can take a Jim and you can say, hey, I'm sharing this with you because I want you to know this about me.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is that you're going to be kind of a flake, or you're not going to guard it, or you're not going to be
direct. And
yeah, you're not going to treat it with the, like, mm-hmm. this is a big ask for me, or this is a big tell. I'm telling you something big that's close to my heart.
I feel vulnerable.
It's a bid for an intimacy. It's a vulnerability, right? And my fear, like, if you really want to get real with the gym, my fear is that you're going to blow it off.
Yeah.
Or you're not going to see that this is a big ask. Mm-hmm. This is a big step that I'm taking. And those kinds of moments, you learn whether Jim wants to be any more to you than who he is already. And maybe he rises to the occasion, or maybe he's like, hey, oh, you want to take this to the next level.
Yep.
Right? You want to take whatever that level is. Oh, okay. We're not just texting buddies anymore. We're go grab coffee buddies now. And, you know, like, there's all kinds of steps probably.
And also too, it could be an instance where you figure out, well, maybe Jim's just Jim.
Yeah.
And can I accept?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I be okay with that without putting more expectations on him? Or maybe Jim gets real with you and says, I'm not your coffee buddy.
I would love that.
Like,
some of my friends
just
like,
keep me at texting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I have a buddy who does it, a former student of mine. He lives down in Austin, and he says, when I left West Texas, he says, you need to know something. I'm not a good long distance friend.
Good for him.
Don't expect me. I'm not going to be texting. But when we're together,
when you're in town,
I want to be with you.
Yeah,
I want to know when you're in town. I want to hang out. I want to go to dinner, but I am not going to. And okay. So I have no hard feelings whatsoever. And I don't expect him to be there when I'm on my deathbed either.
Yeah. Yes. That's awesome. That is awesome. Is that the only friend you have who's ever said something like that? I'm assuming that's a rarity to be that forward.
I mean, a lot of my friends are therapy friends, right? Mm-hmm. And so they've had their own personal growth, and they've had
that's so awesome.
Forced upon them, you know, by virtue of their profession. So I have a handful of people who would say things like that. And a handful of therapy friends who say, when you have cancer, I will be there. You know,
I don't have any friends who, except for Haley. Haley's probably the only one who's like, I know if anything were to happen. That's not true. I don't have a ton of relationships like that. And I think that's where sort of Lonely Alex, maybe everything we're talking about today is Lonely Alex sort of rearing its head.
Mm.
That part of me. And maybe my brain was just sort of.
Yeah, because your first reaction was, wow, that is so cool that you would have somebody tell you that.
Yeah.
Like, does that exist for me? That's what I hear you saying. Could that exist for me? Could
I wish that could exist for
somebody?
Me.
Yeah. I can call him up. I can ask him to.
Will you just call this dude and
tell him you're not going to be there for him?
I think what's so fascinating to me is that's such a level of, like, authenticity.
Yeah.
You know? Which, yeah. Can you imagine? There's not a lot of Minnesotans who'd be like, I'm going to call you and tell you. I mean, we struggle to, like, tell people we're not going to show up at their party, you know? Or we're, like, how are we going to say, hey?
Yeah. That's good to provide that kind of context for our Irish listeners. five people or the 5% or whatever.
I still have to reach out to that podcast. I'm going to do it. I'm going to see if I can like interview her or something. Yeah. And also too, I bet you, Dr. Steve, you would agree with the statement. Alex, I think a lot of people struggle with or think about this very thing. Deal with this same kind of doubt and wondering who's a friend, who's not a friend. Do they wish they had more friends, closer friends, etc. So, acceptance. And grateful for having Haley, my buddy. Shout out to Haley. Oh, I forgot to tell you. We bought a house too.
Oh, that's big.
Yeah,
happy birthday.
Right? So
Haley bought you a house for your birthday.
Dude, I'm assuming you're going to tell me this is normal, but like, I do not like buying a house. I feel like I'm supposed to be really excited. I'm like, yeah, we found the one. This is so great. But all I can think is like, I have just committed financially to a liability. Everyone always talks about home ownership as an asset. That is so not true. You have to put money into it, fix things.
It's both and.
Ugh, so stressful. And all I can think of, dude, is that like I've made...
My fault. Which one?
My fault and like mastery are going nuts. Just like I need to find the perfect deal.
Because look at this. You have your squares and your arrows and stuff and your different colored pens. And Haley's got her set too.
Mm-hmm.
And the house is symbolic of something for you. Points to my fault, and I would assume that it's probably means something different on her squares.
Yeah,
like her squares don't even match up with some of these squares.
She's so excited.
Yeah,
because to her it probably represents a home and family
and right. And your tunnel vision around my fault probably has her own tunnel vision around the fantasy of what the house is going to be and how the house is going to transform us. It's going to have an impact.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone has a tunnel vision fantasy of things, because a house is not just a place where you live. It has meaning. You assign meaning to it.
And I'm afraid I messed it up and picked the wrong one. Everyone's like,
you can't.
I know. And like, I get to acceptance Alex or whatever, like reasonable Alex is like, no, this is a great house. Love the location.
Yeah.
Literally, there was one street in the city of Minneapolis I wanted to live on, and I found a house on it. So that's pretty damn good.
That's crazy.
But also, I'm super anxious about it.
Yeah.
I got to rent this place out now. Got to get someone out of this lease. I'm worried about paying for two places.
Yeah.
Super stressful. Sucks. But also I'm excited.
Yeah.
I just wish.
And sometimes when I've had moments like that, it's been really helpful to have somebody say, you'll get through this.
Yeah,
you'll do this.
I know.
A lot of people have done the same thing, and there's no reason why you can't also get through it.
I think I'm just looking more for someone to say, the way that you feel is totally normal.
Yeah.
Like, I feel all this pressure, societal pressure to be like, no. Like, everyone has been like, so are you excited? You don't sound that excited. I don't want to be like, of course I'm not excited. I'm stressed.
I'm nervous.
Yeah. I'm nervous as shit. Like, and I feel a bit embarrassed. I want to be like faking. Oh, we found the one. This is it.
Yeah.
We know everything. This is perfect.
Yeah.
But I can't, I don't want to. I want to be true to my feelings, which is I'm excited. I'm terrified.
Yeah. Both of those things. Both and.
Both and.
Not either or.
But yeah, we bought a house. We're getting married in 70 days. Got work stuff. Yep.
Is the house a new construction or is it?
1920. It got renovated in 2016. It was so great. We got an inspection. Get out. Guy's just like exactly the type of guy you want inspecting your house.
Mm.
Reeks of Marlboro. Red's got a tool belt. Big 6'2" dude. He walks up. He's like, you guys are in beautiful shape with this house. Like, that guy. He's like, I've seen a lot of Minneapolis homes. They did a really great job. Got renovated in 2016. So, and they did a bunch of stuff. Right. He's like, you got one outlet that's out in the top floor. That's it.
Wow.
Now, if fast forward, you know, maybe he's not the best inspector, but you know, he's
you'll see. But he knows what to say at the moment.
So
he knows how to read a room.
Knows how to read a room. He was very assuring, reassuring that the owners, the previous owners, did a very good job.
Yeah. Cool.
So yeah, that's a big, big update on my end about a house move in August. Do you want to rent this place? Do you want this? This has a personal meaning to you. This, yeah, you could take over. You could have a place.
So you have a lease on this place that you need to get out of.
Yeah, we got to find someone to. So I've been stressing out, posting this ad everywhere. Hey, rent my place, rent my place. Yeah, because we're on this for another, I think, 6 months. No, not 6 months. What month is it? July. 5 months.
Yeah. Hmm.
Yeah, so, you know, it's stressful.
Yep.
But I'll figure it out. People have been in my position before, right?
Yeah, totally. And it makes sense that you'd be feeling stressed going through this the first time. Mm-hmm. And don't be surprised if the next time you do it and sell a house, you get stressed as well.
Yeah. Yep. It's all I could think about is the next time we move, I'll have to time selling a house with buying a house. And imagine how stressful that would be. Like, this is supposed to be the easy one because I don't have another house that I need to sell.
Yeah.
What were homes like when you bought your first house? Was it like everything was made from wood? And tell me about those days. Were there interest rates? Was that a thing?
Yeah. You could either buy a house made of straw or of wood or bricks.
Bricks. Okay, well, here's the thing. Right off the gate, you might think straw and wood, but brick is the way to go.
Yeah.
Because it is wind resistant. That's what you're going with, right? I'm assuming you're doing the Big Bad Wolf?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Just making sure. So, yeah, that's everything new with me. Anything new with you? The last couple of minutes here.
I don't have a lot new.
That's good.
My sense is that your work in EMDR, the stuff that you don't like doing necessarily, right? You wanted to not go to that one today or last week before your birthday. You did not want to go to that one. But you're getting something out of that that's different than what you get from George and different than what you're getting from me.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I like to think about therapy as being, you know, in seasons, right? We talked about plateaus and, you know, sometimes there's a season for this and sometimes there's a season for that. It's a very biblical kind of reference an old 60s song, you know, by the
Birds.
There
is a season.
Yeah. And so this session has felt and the last session has felt like we're talking about stuff, but I still feel you, it still feels to me like you grabbed a nugget in here about mastery versus acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you've been visiting that and going back to that every now and then. And I think that's been a key for our conversations for you.
Yeah.
Cause you grabbed onto it and you refer to it all the time. You talk about that's mastery brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not convinced mastery brain is helping me. This is acceptance brain. I'm going to toy with that. I'm going to play with that. And sometimes I think people need time out of therapy to go toy and play with the ideas.
Mm-hmm. I think my EMDR is helping me with the acceptance part because it's allowing me to revisit the things that I've been just thinking about.
Yeah.
And looking at them more from the, okay, let's. You've been scratching at this thing for a while. Let's go in, look at it, accept it, move on.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the EMDR process is sort of been like. And I do find myself after doing these sessions, you know, seeing you and coupled with the EMDR work, like I'm starting to realize I can legitimately see a world in which I get no therapy.
Yeah.
Like prior, I was like, oh man, I'm going to have to be in therapy, you know, all my life.
Yeah.
But now I definitely feel way more confident in this not confident, but I just see a reality where it's like, I'm good. Everything that I thought was bothering me is actually just normal life, and it's all good. So yeah, it's just, it could be a little uncomfortable to get there, I think, with the EMDR. Just
so, like, to me, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we started, you talked about you know, everybody should have a therapist. Yep. You should go every week. You should go twice a week. You know, like, I'm ad-libbing here a little bit, right? But that was more representative of your attitude, that, you know, and I think whatever you've been doing has led you to this place, whether it's conversations with me, George, you know, even in your conversation with George, George is saying, maybe we don't need to be meeting. Maybe, yeah.
Yep.
Maybe our time is coming.
He has been preaching that for a while.
Yeah.
But I never was like getting, yeah. I think it's because I wasn't getting what I needed in a weird way without sounding insulting, like, you know?
So, but maybe he was maybe he could only do so much with his
and
one
he
voice.
He had said that to me many times.
Like, maybe you needed another person, yes, to go, I don't think you're a once a week kind of guy. I don't think you may not need that, you know?
He's been super vocal about looking at therapy as therapists are uniquely different.
From one another.
Yes.
Yeah. And you get one thing from this person, you're not going to get from the other person.
Yep. You need to.
And that doesn't mean that this is good therapy and that's bad therapy.
Yeah. Yep.
It's just a different person.
He was a huge advocate of that. That's why he was like, do EMDR, you know, do the podcast thing. You'll get more perspective. And the more perspective you have, the better off you'll be.
It's more data.
Yep. More mastery. More things to master.
JK. Yeah. Don't look at it that way.
No, I'm just teasing. Yep. So, in a weird way, it was branching out and getting multiple perspectives that allowed me to get a better, to feel more comfortable.
Think about that Venn diagram, that sweet spot in the middle between all these different
people. It's like, okay, I've been putting in the work.
Yeah.
I've seen a couple of good therapists.
Yeah.
One okay one.
Yeah. That's here. That's me.
And I'm revolving around the same conclusion. Like, I feel confident in that sort of, I've done my homework. I'm confident in this idea of like, okay, I'm in a good spot. I'm handling things the right way. And my next step is, can I feel comfortable with what I'm going through?
Yeah.
It's just weird that I had to see multiple. I don't know. Honestly.
But you can also do that. You don't have to do that in therapy, right? Remember, we started on day one, we said therapeutic experiences are more important. My belief, therapeutic experiences are more important than therapy.
Yep.
And what you just commented on earlier in this session was a friend of mine who said, pulled me aside when we were departing. Mm-hmm. We were not going to be sharing time and space as much anymore. And he said, I'm not a good friend. I'm not a good long distance friend. I know this about myself. So I think you can replicate what you got from me and from George and from EMDR person and the therapist you see with Haley.
Yeah.
I think you can replicate that with authentic friends, mm-hmm. authentic people in your life who will give you the straight shit.
And I think I need to, or I want to, in order to achieve that, put myself out there first.
That's what has to happen.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
You don't get that. You don't get that unless you risk putting yourself out there.
Which I know we've talked about that. And as outgoing as I may seem on this podcast, like, I definitely can improve. Hey, here's what I'm, here's what I'm looking for. I don't know how you articulate that.
Yeah.
Here's what I'm looking for in a friendship. Are you interested? I don't know. It's probably a better way of saying
it.
So
do you remember? It's your life. You better remember this. Unlike you telling me your age just a second ago and me not remembering it in the very moment you told me. You went to I'm not going to remember, I'll describe it because I won't remember what the names of the people or the group, but it was like
the entrepreneur thing.
Yes, the entrepreneur group. And on day one, you were like, so much. I'm not a big fan of religion and I don't need you guys to be my religion, right? Yep. Kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where is that for you? Because that's also a group where you could You could try to put yourself out there in a different way if you wanted to. You could risk putting yourself out there and seeing what that group does. Yeah. And that group seemed to have some built-in safety nets, some built-in kind of like rules and things like that, rules of engagement, where you could say, I want to practice being intimate. Because I think, especially with if you're an entrepreneur, your ideas are yourself, your core, right? Hey, I think this would work. I think the world needs this, and my thinking and...
It's very personal.
Very personal and intimate. And putting yourself out there, you can kind of gauge who are those people that will be the good friend? Who are the people who will be also intimate with me?
So, ironically or unironically, I left that group. yep. I don't know if you remember this too, but you called it. You're like, I don't see, I'm with Haley. I'm with the ECU bailing because Haley read it was like, Alex, you're not sticking around. You're out. But yeah, so, hey, maybe I'll join again. But yeah.
So that's one way, right? So I'll reiterate, I'll underscore that. That's one way that could have been that, but maybe you do it with different. Maybe you do it differently. You're also at a time in a season, right? Go back to that song. You know, you're at a time. You're investing a lot in your primary relationship with Haley.
I'm building a nest.
Yeah. I just bought a nest.
Yep.
And
put eggs
building
in
a nest and investing in that core, that foundation,
which I know is a transitionary period in a lot of adults' lives. Yeah. Like. Your family becomes your focus. A lot of energy goes into that.
Yeah.
And I think something I'm anxious, feel insecure about is knowing that, well, my attention, my energy is going to be pulled away from being able to make new friends. So I'll have to rely on the friends I have. But I know everything will work out.
You get introduced to new friends because you have new experiences. I'm thinking about when you have a kid or kids or whatever.
Yeah.
And then it changes everything.
And when I meet those people, I can practice putting myself out there and be like, hey, here's the kind of person I am.
Yeah.
And if it, you know, turns people off, then cool.
Then maybe you didn't want to be besties with them anyway.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah.
Or you become disarming and like, oh, wow, he was really open with us.
I think that's what I'm... afraid I'm gonna get people like, whoa, easy.
But that may be their first thing, and then they may be like, oh my gosh, that was a little disarming at the first, but it was kind of nice as well.
Hopefully. Yes. And the last point I did want to make was I think I am it's scary to be vulnerable, and I think a fear I have is that, you know, I will be authentic and people will use that strategically. Sort of maybe manipulate me or, you know, manipulate my honesty, figure out a way to take advantage of what I've exposed for their own sort of personal gain, which
it's possible.
I grew up in the Valley of Snakes. So I think that sort of had a lasting impression.
Is that a real place?
I don't know. I made it up. Yeah. It's just, I just have all these, I can think of all these times my parents were like, do not trust people ever, you know, don't be vulnerable. It's corporate America, man. It's cutthroat.
Yeah.
It's like Succession.
You've seen that show? I haven't seen it. But
it's really hard for me to watch that show. I love that show, but sometimes I have to tell Haley, I can't watch this, and I'll leave the room.
Because it's too real?
It's very real for me, yeah. I see a lot of friends. I see a lot of family. I see relationships, you know? And maybe that's why everyone loves it, but for me, it's just too personal sometimes.
Too painful.
Yeah, it's just tough to see authenticity be a weakness. That's like the whole point of the show in my mind.
Which is fascinating because this is the antithesis of that.
I know.
It's this is you saying, I wanna open up to an unknown audience of people.
Which is like the horror, my parents' horror, you know, like complete opposite of how they were raised and what their life experience was like.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, they experienced tons of trauma. I think, you know, all the times they were screwed over and they had people take advantage of them and, you know.
Yeah.
Woof. But yeah, a lot to discuss for next time.
Maybe.
I'm going to wrap. Yeah, maybe not. Who knows? Time will tell. But yeah, thank you for joining me on this birthday episode.
Seems like I should sing to you.
No. That is not necessary, Dr. Steve.
Not all necessary, but it would be a bonus. It might spike with the listeners.
Yeah, it might. It might. There
you
is
you have a guitar world. Here somewhere, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I put it away.
That looks like a rifle.
That is a gun case, yeah. I had to fly with my shotgun to Montana, which, probably unsurprisingly, very easy to do in the United States.
Yeah.
We shot clay pigeons. It's a lot of fun. It's basically like Top Golf. He had like all these different stations in this mountain, and you just, you know, different stations, different patterns they'd fly.
Yeah.
You just walk around. You could take a golf cart to different locations. It was super cool.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Montana, man. Great place. All right. Well, acceptance. So cool. Everybody loves it. And be kind to yourself.
This is Alex wanting to wrap up.
Yeah.
Put a nice little bow on it.
Yeah. See you when I see you.
Yeah, take care.
Take care.